Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggly.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the Queen of Trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
And you are now tuned in to episode 416 for an exclusive interview going down tonight on Off the Cuff Radio. I'm your host, King Eric, and this show here is sponsored by Da Vinci Clothing, Buddy Boy Entertainment, Fleetwood and the Cotton Pickers, Jesse's Boutique, Core Financial. You name it, you know how to get down this. And tonight's guest, man, this was my first time actually listening to this record right here. Because, see, what I like to do sometimes when I'm receiving records, I like to play it first so I can get the initial reaction on the air. And, wow, this record here was fire, man. Our guest tonight, very talented actress, very talented singer, as you can hear from this single here, called Hot Air Balloon. We got Nyara Collins on the line, y'all. Welcome to Off the Cuff Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. Hello, hello.
How you doing tonight?
I am well. I'm grateful. I'm blessed. Thank you so much for having me on Off the Cuff. And thank you very much for the positive reception to the song, of course. It means so much to me.
Yes, yes. Because, see, what I wanted to do with that record there, because sometimes I like to have initial record, I mean, a natural initial reaction before I go on the air to hear the record. Because that's where you get that real feeling. And that record there just, it's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, you took it back to the essence of R&B. And that's totally missing today.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. It's definitely one of my heart's work. I try to put every ounce of my being and my emotion in every song that I put out. And that one specifically being written, engineered, and produced by myself as well, it definitely holds a lot of weight near and dear to my heart. So thank you.
Oh, wow. So how did you come up with the concept behind that? Because it was something that I've never even heard of, and using a balloon.
Yes. So I was in the process of dealing with the passing of my grandmother / mother since she raised me. And I had a greeting card on my desk for my home studio. And it had Hot Air Balloon. Mm-hmm. And I instantly just started messing around on the keys and playing piano. And I was thinking in my mind, where would I go? What type of picture would I paint as far as positivity in my life? Where could I take myself in this hot air balloon? And that's where it started off at, just the instrumentation, the production, and going from there with writing as well.
So how has your fan base received it so far? Like, what's the reception? What's the fan reception been like?
Honestly, everybody loves it. Of course, we're not going to have everyone to love the song. Different strokes for different folks, of course. But majority, everyone is saying that it's different. It's fresh to hear just raw voice versus all of the synthesizers and instrumentation and extra changing of the voice. So it's definitely good to bring back real vocal talent and showcasing what it means to be a real vocalist.
Yes, indeed. And now I got on the line, I have my co-host, T-Max, with the facts. Welcome to Off the Cuff Radio, man. We have a very talented singstress on the line right here, man. This record blew me away. And I'm very hard to impress at times.
What's going on, miss? How you? It's T-Max and DEA, one-fourth of the outstanding OTC. How you doing?
Bless. Thank you for being a part of the whole energy of the show as well. Thank you.
Well, look, we thank you for coming on and whatnot. So, obviously, you know, King, I listen a little bit, and you and King were talking about in terms of music in reference of, you know, what you're, you know, down on my phone, you know, in terms of how you're trying to bring, you know, real vocal, you know, ability back to the game. You know, where we have seen over the years the culture kind of shift to where, you know, me and King come from a generation, our parents come from a generation where we had the singers, you know, Aretha Franklin, Jackie Wilson, James Brown, you know, Anita Baker, you know, Prince, you know, Michael, Chaka Khan, you know, Marvin Gaye. You know, Mariah Carey.
Just go ahead and say the whole Motown. the whole motion.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Especially, you know, of course, Maurice White, you know, with Earth, Wind & Fire, you know, Lakeside, you know, all the groups. They really epitomize the essence of, as you said, instrumentation and perfect synchronization with vocal harmonies and such. You know, and it seems like now when we look at the music industry, it's more about theatrics rather than talent. It's all about, you know, showmanship rather than real substance. How have you been able to pretty much forge ahead in terms of your vision in reference to what you are trying to, you know, really put out there for, you know, your product and really, you know, pushing it forward?
Absolutely. So, of course, the climate of music has changed, but I do believe that real vocalists and R&B are starting to get more of their shine and their spotlight now. I was brought up with the same generation of music in my household as far as Tina Marie, Prince, Erykah Badu, Earth, Wind & Fire, Jill Scott, the whole thing. And just realizing how it is to be a real musician and training your ear. And with me having background in all genres of music as far as vocal training and instrumentation, it definitely gives me an edge. And being that I am still in the younger generation, I can play around with both my old school inspiration but give it a new school flair. So it definitely helps to keep a keen eye out for the trends, not necessarily follow them, but more so make it my own and still keep it fresh overall and staying ahead of the game.
That's real, you know, and like you said, you know, when I was naming all the old school artists, I don't want to be remiss without giving props to some of the new ones. You know, of course, Chris Brown, Trey Songz, you know, her, you know, that's my boo thing. Yes, I say it on air. I'm a big her fan. Yes, I am. You know, Kehlani. You know, if you didn't know by them two names alone, I have a big thing for the Bay Area girls out there. Shout out to Vallejo and Oakland, you know, and all around. You know, so in terms of where you see, pretty much, who do you feel like today, in addition to yourself in the industry, maintaining tradition in terms of really, you know, kind of keeping that culture, that
musical world keep going in terms of maintaining the standard. Oh, absolutely. As far as those that are keeping the real music alive, you named quite a few of them. As far as her being a lyricist, musician, and overall amazing artist, Kehlani is awesome in her ways as well. Of course, there's Jasmine Sullivan is a prime example. She's really holding down the reins as far as that vocal capability. Ari Lennox is another amazing artist. And, of course, Ms. Badu is still in the mix, of course, still holding it down for all of us. And so many other amazing artists that I feel that I would love to work with. Of course, the Bailey sisters, Chloe and Hallie, are absolutely amazing as far as bringing the alternative side to R&B. There's so many amazing artists, and even males as well, like the Bryson Tillers and the Chris Browns and so many other amazing artists that are bringing it as far as penmanship and also vocal capability. So there's so many that I pull inspiration from that I would love to work with, but there's very few that really hold it down as far as the vocal capabilities. And Brandy as well, still holding it down. If you've heard her new project, oh my gosh, it was in rotation as soon as it dropped. So just hearing those that came before me and even those that are revamping their image, it's so refreshing to know that we're still out here doing what we love.
What I also like there is when I listen to some of your music, it also has some of that neo soul style to it, and that's definitely a sound addition, because that was like the essence of black music right there. You know, it's that neo sound that was crafted like from This Education of Lauryn Hill, the India Irie, Erykah Badu's, D'Angelo, that whole movement was amazing.
Yeah, who Swartians. We have there? Benet. Well, yeah, we had Eric Benet. Who else? Glenn Lewis. You have music.
Soul Child.
You have Bilal. You know,
it was all feel good music too.
Yeah, I mean, Mint Condition. You could even kind of put them into it as well. You know, in terms of that traditional R&B soul, you know where it was coming in. Pretty much as you, it's just amazing to see how you have such a pulse on, you know, what's going on today and such in terms of it. What have you found in terms of how it has been being an artist and just, you know, marketing, just being able to create, you know, doing shows, you know, whether virtual or live, and just, you know, being able to present your, you know, your gifts in the world?
Great question. It has been a bit of an adjustment for a lot of us as far as the switching over to the virtual world and the world opening back up officially and having live concerts. But I find that you have to get back to the basics sometimes. I started off early in my career doing a lot of covers and doing song requests on multiple social media platforms. And now having that, we have another platform added on, TikTok and YouTube expanding to the great mecca that it has become. Just being able to give the fans what they want. They want to feel connected and personable.
Hmm.
Even though social media has definitely opened up the gate for folks to be in your business more so now and feel entitled to it.
Right.
And just having those limitations to sing on like a Tiny Desk concert or going live and doing a little mini impromptu concert for your fans. And those intimate concerts really make a world of a difference. And singing some of their favorites and giving them a sneak peek as to your world and your new music that's arriving. So it's definitely making it a lot more personable with your fans and giving you a bit of an edge. I personally love it. I'm still doing a lot of covers. I'll take song suggestions and even flip the covers on their head and change it into my own personal style. And it's definitely coming back around as far as folks loving the more intimate live music settings and ultimately having more opportunities, because those of us that are still kind of in the house and that have limitations in our communities where we can't still come outside fully to an extent, it makes it a lot easier to make sure everyone is still engaged and loving the music that they've been listening to for quite some time now.
So what inspires your content?
Oh, I pull from all walks of life, experiences, all of my emotions. Everything that you hear is a piece of me, a story that I want to tell from people that I've engaged with. Or even just as an ambivert, naturally, I love to people watch and create scenarios in my head of their lives and what they're about to go do, and painting a picture for the listener. Even though you may not necessarily see what's in my head, I can create imagery with my words and my melodies to really reel you in and almost make the song cinematic in a sense, to make you feel it and be able to visualize it. So just being able to storytell, as a lot of the major artists have done, like the Shy Lights, prime example. Have You Seen Her is an amazing song. Just if you have a main introduction to a song and it really gravitates the audience, you can't fall short of gaining a fan. So that's my main objective, is to paint that picture for you and to take you on a journey along with me from the beginning to the end of the song.
That's real. How important is it for you in terms of maintaining your own standard in terms of, you know, maintaining a sense of dignity and non-compromisation of your craft and letting the talent speak for yourself, as opposed to not having, you know, a lot of crazy-ass theatrics that a lot of artists use to try to sell product?
Oh, yes, highly important. Of course, you know, there is a difference between being just a vocalist or an artist and being an overall performer. And sometimes you do have to bring in those dramatic or those aspects to reel in the newer generation, because that's what they're looking for. That's what they're listening to. And the upcoming generation is highly important as far as the fan base and the listening base, because they're streaming now. Not a lot of people are buying units or buying actual songs, but they're streaming on multiple platforms, and it's become kind of a mecca for a lot of artists to maintain their livelihood. So it's definitely important as far as the dramatics and theatrics are concerned. But me personally, I feel that as long as I maintain true to myself and who I am as an artist and not compromising for the trends per se, as I stated previously, still incorporating different bits and pieces from artists that I see or that I would love to work with of this newer trend, but still maintaining that anchor and never forgetting where I came from and knowing who I am, not only as an artist, but as a woman in general. So it's highly important in maintaining, but still being able to be flexible, bending but not breaking, if you understand where I'm coming from.
Definitely.
What are like your top three? What are like your top three albums that you studied to, you know, to get your craftsmanship all ready to be, you know, to get your flow in motion, so to speak? Like, what was your top three favorite albums?
Of course, the very first album when I was young, mind you, I got into the industry professionally at the age of 6, and the very first album that I listened to and purchased on my own was Brandy's Never Say Never album from 1998. So that was really the beginning of my expansion in lyricism and musicality. The second one being one of my favorite albums of all time, Songs in the Key of Life, Stevie Wonder. I can listen that from beginning to end currently and never skip a song. I have to hold on to three. Jeez, that's a toughie for me. I guess you could say the third album would probably be Mint Conditions from the Mint Factory, because the musicality of who they are as a band and realizing that the entire sound is not just based off of one person, even though Stokely is definitely a singer in his own right. It's really about having one complete sound in a complete package and realizing that every single portion of the song or inflection really creates the environment and the body of the work itself. So definitely From the Mint Factory, Songs in the Key of Life, and Never Say Never. And if I had to throw a little bonus in there, the Purple Rain soundtrack, Off Rip. I love Prince. So
who doesn't love Prince?
Yeah, see, I asked that question because that's the key to making great artists, because great artists studied the greats before them. And we live in, I miss the days where, you know, the albums were very important. It ain't like single driven like it is today.
No, that's very true, very, very true. And I think that a lot of the drive for singles is more so to gain a quick amount of attention and build from that momentum, which is a lot of one-hit wonders that come along in the industry. And it happens. I mean, not everybody is destined to be a great or to put out continuous bodies of work that can captivate an audience. Some people are just not built for that per se. But there's no discounting to people that are just putting out singles. Maybe they're still trying to find their sound or testing the waters as far as their audiences are concerned, so that way they know which direction that they want to go in. So I don't discount anyone as far as singles are concerned, but there was a time where beginning to end, the album had a cohesive story and you could just listen to it without skipping a track, which I absolutely adore and love.
Yeah.
Indeed.
That's where you get to know
the artist, and you get to know who the individual is, because that's their story, that's their life, that's their blood, sweat, and tears getting put out there. But sometimes it's good with the singles, too. It all depends on your lane.
Very true. Very, very true. Like I said, everyone is still trying to find their sound or find their niche in the industry, because there's so many artists that are sounding the same now, and it's kind of getting watered down in a way. So when people are kind of throwing different things out there, it's really just to test the waters and see if it's hot or cold. It's very hip-hop driven, the airwaves right now, so to speak. And I mean, of course, we're kind of peeking in there as far as the R&B and the pop girls and those that are having crossover records. But it is very hip-hop driven. But I think we're kind of reeling it back in, of course, for the real artists out there.
Yeah. And one thing about it, too, like you said, with the singles back in the day, you know, you had singles coming out that there was pretty much a promise that you were going to hear from that artist in the longer term in terms of them actually having an album. Because by that time, you know, of course, it was different back in the day in terms of how you got on. The trajectory was you were auditioning for a label, you know, you got on, you know, they put you in the studio, they felt like you were ready, well, you were ready, and then, you know, they get the single out to actually, you know, build a buzz. I mean, when you look at, I remember 1992 when Mary J. Blige, you know, when they dropped a single for Real Love. Now, before then, everybody just known her in 91 as being that, you know, feature backup singer on Father MC's, you know, I'll Be Good, and that's it was just something that, you know, it just, but when she really got to get out on her own and show it, I mean, and then of course 411, what's the 411 dropped, what, the fall of 1992, and I mean, Mary just, that began her legend, you know, but she had like 3-4 strong singles before her album actually dropped, you know, you could look at, you know, back in the day with Total in 95, you know, when they dropped Can't You See off the, you know, New Jersey Drive.
Oh, yeah.
Before there, yeah. When, I mean, and this is like when Big was like, you know, rest in peace to the great, you know, Big Papa. You know, this is like when Big was like a gear into his career, and he was like, in terms of really being known, you know, like, because he was known, you know, for, you know, quick, because we off the cuff, we throw out trivia on off the cuff. Like in 92, you know, he was on the Who's the Man soundtrack, Party and Bullshit. 93, he was on the Supercat Dolly My Baby remix. 94, you know, Juicy comes out. You know, fall of 94, you know, the album drops. And in 95, Big is like, so you're looking at 3 years in, and like Big is like, no pun intended, Big is like really big at this time. So then this group comes in with Total, you know, and they like have this song with a James Brown sample, and it's like, we were hooked. We were like, okay, like, you know, when's the album dropping? And then, of course, Total's album dropped, and the record was fire, you know, so that was definitely able. Yeah, you know, definitely. Me and King are young enough to, you know, old enough and simultaneously young enough to remember when all that was going on. You know, the excitement, you know, you, and I mean, of course, Faith. You know, when she dropped, You Used to Love Me. I will plug that album shamelessly. For those that have not listened to Faith's debut from 1995, her self-titled, I see Max on Off the Cuff Radio will say that is probably one of the best R&B debuts, probably, because it was released in 95, so I would say probably within the past, that 15-year period, that time in 1980 to 95, that album is in the top five of R&B debuts. That album was just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And she was only, I think, 21 when she did that album. So, yeah.
Yes. But one thing I can say is a lot of times when groups or young artists that are signing to these 360 deals, especially in that time, if you had a really big album, it was kind of tough to have a follow-up album. Your sophomore album really had to be the banger for you to really be able to top it, because everybody's comparing to your last, like, okay, that was great, but now the fans are wanting to know where you're going to take us from here. And that was definitely hard for a lot of groups, which caused them to fall off, or they have unsungs, and where are they now, aside from them not looking at their paperwork per se, or they're getting into these deals and not knowing what they're getting into. But it's definitely kind of tough, especially in groups, to have a follow-up album that's greater than your first. So it was definitely a time. Even with singles themselves, the singles were so skillfully thought out and strategized for the time, for the climate of music.
That part.
And specifically for that audience at that time. Who are we, what niche are we tapping into? How can we beat whoever it is that's on the top of the label right now, on the top of the chart, to prevent us from getting shelved, because they were still shelving a lot of artists around that time too. and just really strategizing to the best of their ability, how can we captivate the audience for this person? And you speaking of Mary as a prime example, when even when the My Life album dropped, that was, it changed the entire trajectory of music for that time. And nobody was doing it like they were doing it at all. But at the same token, it's really hard to be able to have that kind of kick down the door mentality when there's it, when the industry is very saturated right now.
Yeah. And I think when you look at it, too, from that time, King will tell you, you know, that I'm a – I am – I can appreciate a lot of the artists today because I love a lot of these artists today. Like you said, Jasmine, her, you know, it's I can't forget SZA. SZA is just
oh yeah.
For those that have not listened to Control was a great album, but for those that have not listened to See SZA Run, all her EPs prior to that, you really need to listen to those to really, really, really get an understanding of who she is as an artist
mm-hmm.
that will bring us to Control. The 90s R&B, for me, you know, just has a very special aesthetic because when you look at all the groups, Terry and Monica, Nothing Nice, you have Drama, you had,
mm-hmm.
you know, who else? Illusion. You had Men of Vision. You had who else? Trying to think of who else on Shy, UNV, Universal Nubian Voices, Truth, Intro. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, I'm not trying to shade all the other well knowns, but I want to give the light to those that were not as well known, because what you said about how the industry, you know, now is oversaturated now because everybody sounds alike. There was a heavy, heavy, heavy R&B presence back then, but it was like it was so many artists out at that time. It was hard to get, you know,
yes.
to get heard because there was so many. But the thing is, they were all distinct,
it was competitive.
Having their own difference. Yeah, they all had exactly what my bro said. It was all competitive, and everybody had their own distinct sound. But you know. How do you see
My apologies, y'all. I had to take my dog outside for a minute, man. But
you good?
What did
no,
I miss out
good.
On?
You good? No, you good, man. We're just talking about just the game in terms of, you know, how it is in terms of artists and, you know, basically keep themselves getting from keeping shell back in the day. You know, when you're looking at it now, it's like, you know, from that era, how do you feel about in terms of where the marketing is in terms of videos? Because back in the day, of course, we had Yo MTV Raps, we had Video Vibration, we had Video Soul, we had Video Music Box, and the marketing was really about really giving those underground artists to shine. And the radio was all about playing artists out there. How do you feel about the corporate influence that is coming on radio and even with the lack of now real video shows? Because now it's pretty much you can just go on YouTube now or Daily Motion or whatever and watch them.
Absolutely. So, of course, we know times have changed. Each follower, each view is looked at as a dollar sign under the corporate and major record labels. So numbers are everything. And it's really about consistency on these platforms that causes you to keep your momentum and sponsorships and collaborations with fashion designs, because fashion has become always has been very pivotal in the music industry. You see your favorite artist wearing a certain brand, or you research from back in the day, of course, magazines and certain blogs and things of that sort that really catches your eye, and it goes hand in hand. A lot of these sponsorships, the marketing, the YouTube brands, the sponsorship placements in videos that kind of sets up the artist and the label to increase their dollar amount, you really can't go wrong mm-hmm. with it nowadays because it's so overly saturated, and it's what it's about. It's really about the dollar. And if they're able to market this artist to a specific demographic and really push this artist and curate the image that they want to put out, then it's really just about the corporate machine. Is it sad to see, as far as it not necessarily being about the talent over the numbers? Absolutely, it's disappointing, especially knowing where the music industry was 20, 30 years ago and really being about talent and artist development and your craft and if you really can sing and be in tune and have a stage presence. It has, the paradigm has shifted immensely, but it's really just a sign of the time, and it's more so, can you get with it, or will you be left in the dust as a, oh, we remember them, but they're not doing anything now? Because that's really, it's really about momentum in the industry. What are you doing now? What's going on next? Are you posting? Are you able to put out your new music? When's the next single coming out? When's the album coming out? What marketing are you doing? Are you going on a press tour? What tour are you going on? And these festivals are huge now. So if you're on the bill for a main festival on top of marketing and sponsorships, you're going to make the dollar. Because either way, when you sign these deals, that money that you're getting as far as the advance, for those of the artists that are listening that don't know, that money's not your money. That's a loan, really and truly. That's the label giving you a certain amount to use as far as momentum and time and your resources to be able to make that money back. Until you make that back and then some, and then, of course, the bill is filtrated through the A&Rs, the producers, the engineers, lighting, stylists, and so on, and then you get your check. That's when the money is coming in. But either way, a lot of these artists are coming up with the sponsorships and the marketing in order to keep more of the money in their pocket. Because if you're not on tour right now, especially in the climate that it is, you're not really making money like that. Yeah, the live shows are great. The tiny desks are awesome. You're putting out the songs. But again, they're not selling units. They're putting out streams. And that's where a lot of the focus is right now. So it's definitely disappointing as far as the talent and more so focusing on the amount of the money that they're able to make off of an artist versus shelving somebody that may have twice as much talent. But if the kids are rocking to their music and the streams are out of this world and they're buying their merchandising and the sponsorships and collaboration from the brands that they're having, or a major designer is pocketing off of that artist because of them wearing all of their stuff all the time, and things are selling out left and right just because a singer has worn it, of course the market and the corporate office is going to book off of that. So just to step off of my soapbox for a moment, it's
no,
disheartening.
No, please,
but
please stay on it. We need to hear this.
It's disheartening, but I understand it, most definitely.
Now, what are some of one of the main challenges that you personally encountered in dealing with the music industry?
The main challenges that I've faced, of course, social media marketing, keeping everything up to date, marketing on your official website, making sure that I'm staying up to date as far as algorithm, your analytics, the hashtags that keep people engaged, what people are really looking for as far as your artist demographic and the areas and locations and countries that are really generating the views for your music and dedicating the experience towards them. Another challenge that I could say is, of course, not falling by the wayside as far as the trend, because once one trend is on and popping and everybody's following it, then it starts to dry up and it dissipates. So just keeping up with the now can be a bit challenging, of course. And another thing, of course, continuing to challenge myself as an artist and extending my pen, dipping into different genres of music and different areas of expertise, not only writing for myself, but for other artists as well, and making sure that I'm staying fresh as far as terminology and slang, because that has evolved over the years immensely as well. So just making sure that I'm on top of my penmanship and, of course, the now as far as fashion, music, tastemakers in the game, and overall the industry, it can be a bit of a challenge and a lot of work, but it's definitely well worth it at the end of the day, for sure.
Now, one thing about it in terms of the industry, we've talked about the business aspects and we've talked about in terms of marketing and compensation, but I think there's also one element too that we cannot overstate and omit. How important is it for these younger artists coming in to have the proper mentorship and protection in reference to, you know, making sure that they're, and I don't mean this in a condescending way, we got to make sure the babies are all right, because a lot of these kids are coming in and they're babies in this game.
Yeah.
One example is like with what happened with Salento. You know, of course, for those that, you know, he's the one that did the Nae Nae song, and then he got caught in a situation where he's been charged with murder. How important is it for there to be a mentorship and watching these kids to make sure that they are guided right, that the wrong influences do not get them, and if they start going off track, somebody brings them back to reality about you have an opportunity, don't blow it?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Having the right people in your corner as far as your team and even the people that you choose to have in your personal circle is immensely important. Making sure that the people that you strive to be, if they're not elevating you overall or if they're not in a situation where you're trying to get to, then they don't need to be in your circle in general. If they're consistently questioning your next move or a lot, and a lot of the times we outgrow a lot of people and we want to bring those that we love and we care and tend for with us. But some people are seasonal and some people are a lifetime. And some people are there for a purpose and a reason, and then once that purpose is fulfilled, then they're gone. So, of course, having the right camp around you and being able to help those that are coming up identify who's for you and not necessarily just for the cause or trying to come up off of your hard work and dedication is highly important. But also, aside from just keeping an eye out for who's around you and who's in your camp, but being able to identify who you are and knowing yourself enough to identify when you're not okay or if you're falling by the wayside because of those that you're looking at and who you're trying to emulate or trying to be rather than being your best self. So it goes hand in hand as far as those around you, but also staying true to yourself. But it's either way, it's highly important. And that comes with artist development and training, but also curating and having the right people around you.
Yeah, the team plays a key role.
Absolutely. And that's very important because, you know, like you said, you know, we see a lot of situations with artists where, you know, and one thing about it with esoteric, you know, and all types of references that we have in terms of how we do the show, we bring in, we try to weave in so many different elements. You know, for those that haven't watched the ESPN 30 for 30 Broke, directed by Billy Corbin, about how these athletes get out there and they have these entourages and basically, you know, these were just individuals who were just around them who just didn't do nothing except hang out. And this also applies to artists because you're having both of them in a celebrity lifestyle. Like you said, you know, a lot of times we want to bring people along, but the reality is that, you know, you have to know people from a perspective of who is actually the industrious one, you know, who really does have your best interest at heart. You know, and it's just something that, you know, I don't know if anybody watches American Horror Story. If you haven't, get up on it, because especially for this season 10, Red Tide, it started last night. That opening, those first two episodes were powerful because, and I'm not going to give it away, but I will give you the synopsis of it. It's the question of how far would you go for fame and what would you do to get it once you have it? Well, what would you, you know, and a lot of times with these artists, they get caught up in it. You know, what have you seen in terms of, at times, the overindulgence that has led to the gluttony of fame that unfortunately some artists have, you know, basically committed career suicide of not knowing, you know, the ledge, like Rakim said, trying to get the juice?
I think that
a lot of these artists fall by the wayside because they give in to the facade of the lights, the camera, the money, the whole charade of what it means to be a quote-unquote celebrity. But really and truly, these are real people with real emotions, and they have families, they have had hardship, they've lost some, they've gained some. And a lot of people, even just as coming up young with Nickelodeon and Disney and so on, I've seen a lot of my co-stars go through it as far as the pressures of being that Disney kid all the time. And you're trained to put on a face and conduct yourself a certain way in certain venues and around certain people, and how to dress, how to stand, how to smile. And that eventually, the facade begins to crack. And once that mask is over and done with, and people are starting to see the after effects of being suppressed and depressed into a completely different version of yourself, that's when people are like, oh, they fall off, or something is wrong with them, or they forgot where they came from. It's really just a matter of where they went on their journey and how they can reel themselves back. And I admire those that have acknowledged their differences, acknowledged what their hardships and what they've done wrong, and that are willing to rebuild their brand and come back up into the best version of themselves. When you've seen it behind the scenes and even had moments where you've lost yourself, not necessarily in the fame and the glitz and glamour, but it takes a very strong-willed person to stand up and be in the industry. This is not for the faint of heart. And a lot of these kids come up really fast, one-hit wonders, or they gain notoriety or fame overnight, and they don't have the right people or don't know how to handle it, and they fall short. And they fall off, and then the next thing you know, people are the blogs and the social medias and the shade rooms and so on. They've got so much slack to say, but we're on the outside looking in, and they never know what's going on behind closed doors. So I don't look down upon anybody that has had a hardship or they let the fame and the fortune get the best of them, because a lot of the times they're putting on a facade and a charade to hide what's really going on with them, and eventually it comes out. And it's not necessarily the best, but that's when, again, your team comes into play of saying, hey, you need to take a step back for a minute and get some help or reevaluate your choices. Go to therapy. Go talk to someone. Get a dog for emotional support.
Yeah,
something to really anchor yourself, so that way the blogs aren't attacking you, and the TMZs and the Rossi is not coming after you with 50,000 questions trying to put a damper on your name and your notoriety. So it can be disheartening, but I don't clown anyone. I don't down anyone for if you fall short from where you came from. Just reel yourself back in and try to rebuild as best as you can. And if you can't, move on and try to be the best you can be.
Hey, you know what? It's funny
you
say that, because I personally had to go through that myself. When you start becoming more of a public figure, you can't really do the things that you used to doing. Like, I would really have a hit list of trolls that I would really try to go in on. And sometimes T-Max, we got to play the good cop, bad cop. And T-Max is like, nah, you can't do that. Get off his neck. You can't do that. Because, you know, you get so used to doing that, those comments will get to you. Those comments, because after a while you feel like you got to respond. But then you start seeing it like people going to say what they say. You look at it like, okay, we're doing the right thing after all, because there's an old saying, if you don't have any haters, you're not making moves.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Yeah. And one thing about it, go ahead, please.
Yes, but there's also the thing of checks and balances. There's no positive without a negative. And I honestly love to look at it as I have to be doing something right for all of this negativity to try to come after me to tear me down. So if you're not on your path, if there isn't something or someone that has something to say, but it's a choice in the matter. Are you going to step off of the road and allow that to get to you, or are you going to keep pushing past all of the comments and the negative interactions?
And one thing about it, when we, you know, we're so blessed to be able to do this, we're well over 400 shows now doing this. One thing about it is being in a public arena like we are, you know, people we've met, you know, yourself included in terms of guests we've had who we are so privileged and honored to have on, you know, diplomacy is the imperative. But I'll tell anybody out there, don't get it fucked up. We're not afraid to say something if you cross that line with us. But we also understand in terms of brand equity and marketing, relationships we've cultivated, and professionalism, which is paramount, how we have to pick our battles with situations. And I think that's something that where, you know, when you see a lot of, like you said, a lot of, you know, you've worked with so many people, you know, in terms of especially, you mentioned something about the Nickelodeon and the Disney actors, and that kind of goes off into a broader context in terms of child actors as they try to make that transition into getting those, you know, bigger roles. And you look at, you know, past, you know, over the past, you look at, you know, Gary Coleman, rest in peace. You look at Dana Plato, rest in peace. Of course, Rick Schroeder, you know, Joey Lawrence, a lot of them over the years who were trying to make those transitions. But you get typecast in Hollywood because of how they've seen you, which is a gift and a curse because you're on a hit show, but then they don't think that your range can transcend to that next level. Like you said, this is where the depression comes in, because if you're an actor, that's what you do. You know, and unless you're ready to walk away from it, it's hard to just have something taken away from you like that, especially when you didn't ask for it to be taken away.
Shift gears for a minute. Now, are you into heavily into acting?
Yes. Previously, alongside my 17 years in the music industry, I was in both television and broadcasting and theater. I was very involved in living in L.A. for 5 years. You come across some of the biggest people in the sound stages. But I personally have a stronger love for theater because of the camaraderie that's built and the long sessions of rehearsals and dress rehearsals and learning your stage directions and lighting cues. It's a total rush from when you get that first debut show and everybody is on key and on point. And once the curtains close and you take your final bow, it's a relief. Versus when you're on set for long hours of the day, of course, I enjoyed it thoroughly. It's different because you're in front of the camera and, of course, dealing with all types of different personalities from the cast and the crew to the lighting, the directors, the makeup artists, the assistants as far as the casting, your background actors as far as extras. And I've been both featured roles and extra myself, so I know how many layers it is for broadcasting and television. And seeing how there are instances where people are discriminated against if you're not a major role on these shows, it can be a bit overwhelming. But either way, as far as the life of an actress or an actor, it can definitely have its challenges. But once everything is said and done and the final taping is over and they say that's a wrap, it's so fulfilling. It definitely is.
Yeah, you know, when you're blessed to do it, you know what I'm saying, and you can keep doing it, sometimes opportunities come in and some people are comfortable where they are. I remember they asked Raven Simone one time about, you know, because obviously with her show That's So Raven, you know, she was obviously a Disney darling. And they asked her, you know, because, you know, obviously, you know, from her time on The Cosby Show to that, you know, she was known. So they were asking her one time about why don't you, you know, kind of explore, you know, maybe stepping out of that. And she just said, mm-hmm. basically, I like where I'm at with what I do. in terms of Disney. And, I mean, keeping it real, that Disney money is gone. So, you know, and she had already cultivated her brand, you know, from that level, you know. So, you know, and, you know, pretty much the show has ended. You know, she settled into, you know, kind of not doing as much, just having her regular life, you know, which is fine, you know. But I guess it's all about knowing your limits in terms of it, you know, because like you said, it's a lot of pressure being in the industry. You know, you're in the record industry, everybody's waiting for you to make that next hit song. You know, if you're an actor, one bad movie, or as in Hollywood, we call a turkey, and your career is shot dead. Look at Elizabeth Berkley when she did Showgirls back in the day and how long it took for her to come back from that. You know,
I'm like, damn, they did Jesse from Saved by the Bell dirty, man. Like, damn.
Well,
I'm like, yo, I was like, man, yo, it's like, it sticks on your resume when you drop a dud, but yet all you got to do is hit a home run, score a touchdown, hit a game winner, or have a hit movie, bam, you back on top like Robert Downey Jr., man.
Well, you know, then we can talk about that for a minute. Robert Downey Jr. has always been a consummate actor, you know. He had his drug issues, and they were well documented, but there was the one constant that everybody who ever worked with him said, when he came on to the set, he was ready. He always was ready when it was time to go on set and do what he had to do. You know, it's just a blessing he's still here, because he had a lot of well-documented issues over the years that could have easily killed him, you know. And when you look at what happened, you know, with Elizabeth Berkley and Showgirls, she's a cautionary tale. Disclaimer, we're saying this for reference. We're not saying it to bash anybody, because this goes for anyone. You have to know what the movie is, and you have to know if that part is for you. I think she did that because she was trying to break out of that Jesse from Saved by the Bell. But the movie itself, and it's been kind of reappraised as a guilty pleasure, where when it first dropped back in the day, the critics just, they savaged it. If it was a shish kebab, that'd be the shish kebab nobody wanted to eat the way they speared it. You know what I mean? But you got to know your roles in terms of what you pick, because if you pick the wrong one, like King said, that's going to be a situation that's going to stay on you forever that you did a bad movie like that. Look at J-Lo and Geely. And look how they still mess with her and Ben about that to this day. And it's been 20 years since that, I think, came out.
No, that's very true. But there also comes a time when you have to recognize your brand and knowing when to say no.
Right.
Yes, the paycheck
right.
may look good, but your integrity has to kick in. You have to say no, whether that's putting a damper on the lengthening and time of your career, or if you're just trying to get on your next production. But knowing how to say no and respecting your boundaries and limitations, people respect you a lot more in the industry when you're like, okay, yeah, the paycheck may be good, but how am I going to feel about myself in the aftermath of this production?
Yeah, don't be a whore for money. And I tell anybody that, because the money is going to come back around. You know, if you're good, you could miss one check and you'll get something double that on the next one. But like you said, it is very important to know your worth and not just do anything just because they dangle some money in front of you, because that check you get, it might be a big bag, but guess what? You'll stack yourself in terms of your career being shot to hell if you take the wrong deal. So, yeah, definitely know what you're getting into when you do it.
Hey, you know what? Speaking of overcoming adversities and challenges, now, for what I was reading about your resume, you went through some health issues. Am I correct?
Yes, I do have a breathing condition called subglottic stenosis.
And that's what makes what you're doing impressive, because you overcoming all those obstacles. And people can't even tell just by listening to your music that you're going through that.
Yes, thank you. For those that aren't familiar with the condition, it's a narrowing of the windpipe. So when I was born, I had tubes in and out of me, and realizing that my windpipe is only 60% of what it should be. Even to this day, my immune system is compromised, and my colds can last longer than just the common cold as far as a week, but it can extend into all over a month, 2 months almost, if I don't take the necessary precautions to keep my immune system boosted. But I'm just grateful to be alive to do what I love, and I thank you for the accolade as far as my condition. But that just goes to show that regardless as to your obstacles or your circumstances, if you know what you were meant to do, then nothing can stand in your way.
Definitely. You're a testament to perseverance, strength, talent, integrity, and, you know, all things fantastic and excellent in terms of your endeavors, from thespian, you know, and music alike. You are, you know, a global genius in terms of your Wonder Womanness. I mean, there's not much else to say in that.
Oh, thank you. That's definitely close to my heart. I appreciate the love for sure. But music is a part of who I am. It's my second lifeline. And quite honestly, no matter what I do in any facet, whether it's writing, engineering, singing, it's always going to be a part of who I am. I wouldn't be who I am if it wasn't for music and, of course, having a great support system behind me.
That's what it is. And you know, we about to wrap this thing up in about, like, 5 more minutes. Is there anything in particular that you want the people that's up and coming into the music industry to know before entering the music industry?
Yes. As I stated previously, but I want to make this point so important. How you practice is how you perform. No matter how much you may think you have the song down or your set is down, continue to perfect your craft no matter what you do, because you never know, your next performance could be your last. Anything can happen. So as long as you're putting your best foot forward and continuing to work on your craft, that's all that matters. And realizing that it's okay to be selfish for yourself, because at the end of the day, if you're walking in your purpose and who you are in alignment with your gifts, the people that are supposed to be here will be here, and they'll understand what it is to really cultivate your gift and your craft. And, of course, follow me all on social medias, nyairacollins.com and all at Nyaira Collins. That's NYAIRACO2LINS. And lastly, just thanking you all for having me and having the pleasure to speak on so many different topics and really hailing in our knowledge from the music industry from all walks of life. It's appreciated.
And we appreciate you, you know, so much being on our show. You know, you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. And big shout out to Angela for making this happen. One of the best PRs out there.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah.
Definitely.
We appreciate you joining us. We're going to definitely support you along the way. Be sure to download that single that's out now. Don't bootleg it. Download it.
Buy it.
Yes.
Support.
Oh, yeah. Let people know where they can find your music and where they can follow you. Oh, yeah, she just dipped out. But anyway, this episode is going to be up this weekend, so catch us tomorrow night. We got a big show going down. We keeping this brand moving in the sky. And T-Max, before I go on the air, I got to ask you this.
Yeah.
You trying to go 50-50 with me on buying R. Kelly's catalog?
What's the preliminary on the case so far? What they said so far about
it? I don't know, but he said that he trying to sell his catalog so he can eat. So that's $1 billion worth of stuff in there. Shoot, I believe I could fly along and send my grandchildren to college.
Look, we got to check to see who actually owns that catalog first, because he damn sure don't.
I don't know, man, but
we're
going to check this out, though. I'm going to do some investigating about this. I'm going to have to find somebody to do this, because, man, that's too much good. That's too much good music in there. I got to eat, son. I'm trying to cash out.
Hopefully, well, look, I think we need to try to buy the Death Row catalog before we mess around and do R. Kelly's catalog.
Yeah.
Hasbro,
we shall see, though.
We'll make Hasbro an offer and see what they say.
Yes, sir.
On that note, y'all.
Everybody, we're going to see y'all tomorrow night. Big thank you. Big thank you to Naira for chopping it up with us. A big shout out to Angela Covington for making this happen. And we definitely going to see y'all tomorrow night. So holler at us. Same time, same channel.
Yep. And we out. Peace.